I'm going to invite Justin Nyman Westbrook up as he is sharing part of their story this morning. So thank you, Justin, for your willingness and your vulnerability.
Good morning, friends. Good morning, Zoom friends and family, I see. Hello. May the 4th be with you all. Very sad that Jonah has outgrown his Star Wars onesies. And onesies in general. Why don't we have onesies for older folks? Anyway. They're very cozy. So, as Leslie noted, today I'm going to share the story of how Sierra and I, next slide please, went from a family of two to a family of three. When Sierra and I got married in 2017, we knew that we wanted to have kids. And we also knew that we wanted to have time to just be us together for a while. But those desires were in conflict. We'd gotten married in our 30s, and we knew the biological clock was ticking. And we also had some schooling and career conflicts to consider. But after wrestling with all of this for a while, we began trying to conceive in 2019. Wasn't exactly a great time in the world, but neither was when we started dating in 2016 or when we got married in 2017. When we decided to get married and to have kids, we wanted to do both of those for a variety of reasons. But one of them was we saw them as acts of hope. That God is at work in the world, and that we can participate with God in that work. And that though things often seemed awful, there's still good in the world worth pursuing. So we tried for a year and did not conceive. Each month brought new disappointment. The process became stressful, and then the pandemic hit. So we paused for a while, not knowing what the world was going to look like for a while and whether that was actually a good time to get pregnant. And the clock kept ticking. Toward the end of 2020, we started meeting with the fertility clinic. They ran tests on both of us, and there was no clear cause for why we'd not been able to conceive thus far. We learned that infertility is somewhat common. 1 out of 7 couples experience it. We also learned that it's common for there not to be a clear cause for it. Sierra underwent a procedure to remove some uterine fibroids and a surgery to remove an ovarian cyst, which ended up leading to removing the whole ovary itself due to how large the cyst was. These procedures would allow for a better chance of fertility procedures to work, and they were only the start of what Sierra had to undergo physically to bring Jonah into our lives. We decided to try in vitro fertilization, or IVF, using our own ingredients. This involved multiple daily shots into Sierra's abdomen. I prepared the medication, filled the syringes, and injected them into her. And it was kind of fun to play doctor that way at home. But it was also clearly uncomfortable for Sierra. And the hormones, of course, had an impact on her. These injections were meant to help her remaining ovary to prepare more than one egg during a cycle so that they could then be harvested. A lovely term. So this occurred in March 2021. Sierra went to the clinic multiple times to determine when would be the best harvest time. The ultrasound showed that she had 15 follicles, which are what hold the eggs. When the timing was right, we went into the clinic and the doctor harvested Sierra's eggs. We got 6 from the 15 follicles, fewer than they expected. They then fertilized those eggs directly. And 5 of our eggs successfully fertilized. They then allowed those fertilized eggs to develop for a week to determine which ones would develop into blastocysts, which is a grouping of multiple cells. They put the fertilized eggs in different solutions each day to simulate what they would have experienced in a fallopian tube. Pretty wild, everything that they can do. And at the end of this, from the five, we had four blastocysts. Those then underwent genetic testing to determine which of them would be chromosomally viable in the womb. When this happens, when blastocysts are not chromosomally viable in the womb, they tend to self-abort early in the pregnancy. And so 2 weeks later, 2 weeks of waiting, we learned that we, of those four, had only one chromosomally viable blastocyst. We were disheartened, but it only takes one. Next slide, please. This was our blastocyst. Pretty cute, huh? In May 2021, after undergoing another series of injections at the hand of her husband to prepare her body, the doctor transferred our blastocyst into Sierra's womb. We then had to wait to see if it would implant into her uterine wall. After the transfer, Sierra had to be on bed rest for a couple of days, and she had the great idea. She checked a projector out from the library, and so we watched movies on the ceiling while lying in bed for a couple of days. And now I can't see because I looked up into the lights. Let's see here. Here we go. All right. About 10 days after the transfer, Sierra had a blood test that showed that she was pregnant. We then had to wait about a month from the transfer in order to have our first ultrasound to further confirm the pregnancy. We were cautiously excited. Anything can happen, though, especially early in a pregnancy. We began taking pictures of Sierra in profile to document the pregnancy's progression. In June 2021, the day after Father's Day, which we quietly celebrated, we went to the clinic for our ultrasound. Next slide, please. They found the sac that would contain the baby, but there was no baby inside, just black. The doctor gave us a small amount of hope that maybe the baby was too small at this point, or they just couldn't find the baby on the ultrasound this time. So, though I was sad, I was trying to stay optimistic. We returned a couple of days later to confirm, and this next ultrasound showed the same thing. Our child had not survived. We'd experienced a miscarriage. After this ultrasound, we sat in our car in the parking lot and wept. We took time to grieve. Next slide, please. We had a picture made of our child to memorialize them. Then we decided to go through the IVF process all over again. All of the appointments, all of the injections, all of the fear and uncertainty. Sierra took the brunt of this, of course. This time, we had 8 follicles, not 15. We got 4 eggs, not 6. 3 of them fertilized, not 5. 1 of them became a blastocyst, not 4. And after waiting 2 long weeks for genetic testing, we learned that our 1 blastocyst was not chromosomally viable. We grieved again. This was in November 2021. We decided to take a break from trying. I couldn't take all of the stress and anxiety and unknowns again so soon. We decided to wait until the new year to talk about what we might do next. When the new year came, we took a walk and discussed our options. We could try IVF with our ingredients again, but it seemed like that wasn't our best bet, especially with the clock still ticking. We discussed trying IVF with only 1 of our ingredients and using a donor's ingredient for the other part. We talked about embryo adoption, where both of the ingredients were from donors. We talked about adopting an already born child. It's pretty incredible all the things that we can do fertility-wise these days. However, all of these options, of course, involve time and money and waiting and uncertainty. And let's be very clear, the only way we were affording this process in the first place was due to our insurance covering a good chunk of it and student loans being on pause during the pandemic. Eventually, we ended up deciding to adopt an embryo. People who undergo IVF sometimes get more blastocysts than they need, and so they have the option of donating them to folks like us who have difficulty conceiving. The clinic then sent us profiles of the families who had donated blastocysts. Sierra did the first pass looking through them, and then showing me the ones that she thought seemed like viable options. There was a lot of information in these profiles, including things that had nothing to do with genetics, like the donor's favorite books and their favorite foods. Okay, great. They included things like family medical history. And through this process, it felt kind of strange to be choosing our child in this way, based on genetic history. And we wondered what was ethical for us to use as criteria in the process. For example, we wanted to make sure our child had a healthy family health history, but we also had to admit to ourselves that our own family health histories weren't exactly the greatest, so how could we proceed based on that? We received our first collection of profiles, and after reviewing all of them, Sierra passed on all of them, and so we awaited a second collection. When we got those, one of the profiles from the first collection was included again. And Sierra initially set that one aside, but then returned to it. There seemed to be something about it being included twice. Divine intervention? We don't want to read too much into it, but we also didn't want to ignore it. We reviewed the finalists that Sierra had chosen, and in February 2022, we ended up choosing the one that appeared twice. We went out to McMiniman's to celebrate having chosen our potential child. After going through all of the appointments and injections and ultrasounds to determine the proper time, in March 2022, the doctor transferred our adopted embryo into Sierra's womb. Next slide, please. That's Jonah's first picture. Next slide, please. That's me all dressed up to go into the sterilized room for the transfer. It was very hot in that. I don't even know what it was made of, but it did not breathe. Which was the point, I suppose. All right. We did bed rest again. Couldn't get a projector that time. That was a bummer. After 10 days, we had a blood test at the clinic and a home pregnancy test, both of which were positive. And we waited for a month for the first ultrasound after that. And on my birthday, 2022, next slide please, I received the best present ever. I saw Jonah for the first time. And I even got to hear his heartbeat, which was not guaranteed that early in the pregnancy. They said it probably started beating that day. We then had to wait 9 months to welcome our child into the outside world. And I won't lie, by the end, I was ready to get this show on the road. Felt like waiting for Christmas morning. The pregnancy itself was fairly uneventful, at least as the one who was not experiencing it directly. However, as many of you know, even an uneventful pregnancy is filled with lots of ups and downs, fears and uncertainties. Getting to the age of viability for our child, which is around 24 weeks, was a huge milestone for us and our stress. They induced Sierra at 37 weeks due to her age and her blood pressure having increased steadily over the pregnancy. She was in active labor for 3.5 hours. I got to catch Jonah when he came out. He was so long. He just kept coming, and I thought I was gonna drop him. He was also very slippery, of course. And as this was happening, the umbilical cord I noticed was wrapped around his head, or his neck, sorry. But the doctor quickly unraveled it, we moved on. I didn't really think much of it at the time. And so I held him and brought him to Sierra while saying, "Hello, Jonah." And Sierra gave him his first kiss. But then they swept him away, because he wasn't breathing well. And they took him to an incubator in the room. And our doula encouraged me to talk to him. But I didn't know what to say. I was so scared. I thought we might lose him. But after all of this time and effort and waiting and hoping, we'd come to the end only to leave the hospital without him. But I tried to think of something to say. "Daddy's here, Jonah. You've got lots of people helping you. I love you." To a small NICU on the floor, the labor and delivery floor, to get him situated. And they gave him a mask to help him breathe, but that was not breathing for him, which was an important distinction. Next slide, please, for his looking back, cute little mask at the time. Terrifying. They brought him back to Sierra in an incubator before taking him down to the actual NICU floor. I went with him to the NICU while the doctors took care of Sierra in the aftermath of the birth. And after they got him set up in his room, I had time with him by myself. Next slide, I think. Yeah. Without the mask. I'll admit that this, of course, had not been the plan. However, to be honest, we hadn't really had much of the plan birth-wise. We'd spent so much time working to have him that we had not thought a lot about what we'd wanted for the delivery. We just wanted him. But we certainly wanted to be together as a family once he arrived. There was only one thing that we had decided ahead of time that we wanted to do as soon as possible after his birth. We wanted to tell him something. I ended up telling him by myself for the first time. It's a paraphrase of a passage from the Showings of Julian of Norwich, and something we tell Jonah every night before bed. Next slide, please. "God made you. God loves you. God keeps you. And Mommy and Daddy love you so much." I got to help with his tube feedings. I got to change him. The NICU nurses were great about making sure that I was involved. I sang him a mixture of hymns and Weird Al Yankovic songs. Oh, I had not slept well the night before and had just been on the go since then. Sierra had been a little busier. Still tired, and those were the only songs that came readily to mind in my sleepy mind state. I also told him about the stories of Jonah and Thomas from the Bible, and editorialized along the way to explain why I liked their stories and why Sierra and I had given him those names. It took a long time to get through it because of how tired I was, and I got off on all sorts of rabbit trails. But he was a good listener as he slept. But little did I know at this point The things upstairs were not going as planned. Jonah's breathing issues resolved within a few hours, but Sierra had kept bleeding. As you might know, when the placenta detaches from the uterus after birth, it creates a tear in the uterus, a plate-sized tear. And typically, the uterus will clamp down on that to help stop the bleeding. But for whatever reason, that didn't happen for Sierra. She lost a lot of blood and required multiple blood transfusions. Please give blood if you are able. There was an extended period of time where I thought I might leave the hospital without Jonah, or without Sierra, or without both of them. A widower, a single parent, childless, a family of one. I found myself splitting my time between two floors of the hospital to be with Jonah and Sierra as much as I could. Well, I was always with one of them. Our doula was a wonderful support in the midst of this. She could stay with Sierra while I was down in the NICU with Jonah. Called my parents for support throughout as well, in between running between the floors of the hospital, and they kept other family members up to date. Sierra underwent multiple procedures to try to get the bleeding to stop. Eventually, one of them worked. And though I'd known the danger in the midst of it, it really became clear when a doctor who'd been working with Sierra came to check in on her the next day and was surprised that she was not deathly pale, and even said aloud that they thought she might die. Now, of course, during this time, Sierra had been separated from Jonah. I'd been telling him about his mom, how she loved him so much, how she was working so hard to be with him, how she missed him, and how she desperately wanted to hold him. Finally, after a day and a half, which is an eternity when you want to be with your newborn, Sierra was finally well enough to go to the NICU and reunite with him. Next slide, please. Oh. After both she and Jonah were in stabler conditions, I sat down and held my head in my hands and wept from everything I had kept in while trying to take care of both of them. We stayed in the hospital another couple of days as Sierra continued to recover and Jonah got used to eating without a feeding tube. And when it was time, I got to leave the hospital with both Sierra and Jonah. Next slide, please. And now, Jonah will be 2.5 years old in a week. Or 6.5 years old if you count the 4 years he was frozen as a blastocyst. See how that works at the DMV in a few years. Next slide, please. An energetic bundle of joy who loves music, listening to it, making it, dancing to it. A toddler through and through, learning new things every day, talking up a storm, making his wishes very clear. An amazing miracle of biology and technology. A gift from a family we will never meet. The end result of a journey that made me even more aware of what people experience of infertility and miscarriage and birth and postpartum complications. More aware of the amazing things medical science can achieve. More aware of the privilege it is to access it due to financial barriers, as well as time and energy. A way to connect with others who go through something similar. But most of all, the amazing wonder and responsibility and honor and joy it is to be Jonah's father, even in the difficult times. We worked so long and so hard to get you here, Jonah. And we're so glad and grateful.